So welcome back. So come on back in. We're gathering. So I know when I attend conferences, and I'm always like, really? There's a 7 o'clock plenary? I know it's been a long day, a good day, I think, and I hope everybody's had a really good day and you had a chance. I made it to the top of the mountain and back, but I did not climb on the rock thing because I did not want to die on the rocks and leave Julie without a presenter, and then had to hightail it back. So I hope everybody had a good day. As this is the last session of the evening, we're going to try to keep this very interactive, more so than some of the earlier ones have been. So certainly I encourage you to participate. And if we reach that point where I'm like, okay, they're just done, you know, we'll move in a good direction. So the next phase of our conversation, as we're thinking about our stories, sending our stories out into the world, I think the big questions all really start with who. What are some who questions? What are some who questions you can think of? Give me some who questions. Who are you? Okay, who is John Galt? Okay. All right. So, okay, bonus points over here for the who are you? And some of you who attended the bonus kind of going deeper, we started to talk about that a little bit. We talked this morning about stories, how stories can shape our identity. So before we can really think about what stories we're putting out there, we kind of have to have a sense of who are you, who are we as the church, whatever kind of pronoun you want to use, but who are you? And oftentimes, it seems really obvious. So for example, you know, I'm St. Paul's Mount Lebanon. Here's what I can tell you about St. Paul's Mount Lebanon. We are a thriving upper middle class suburb of Pittsburgh. We are a community where people are rabid about their children's educations and children's programming. Like, we invented helicopter parents. You know, that's kind of who we are. We're also in Western Pennsylvania, which is a very Roman Catholic community. And, you know, so right now, that has influenced a lot of who we are as St. Paul's. We are becoming like a safe harbor for a lot of people who have become very disillusioned with the Roman Catholic Church. You know, so that's a little bit of who we are. So I'm going to tell you a little story to kind of get to know me a little bit better about how I ended up doing the work that I'm doing, and it intersects with a little bit of St. Paul's and this question of, you know, who are we? I was the director of children's ministry and the communications coordinator for St. Paul's for about a decade. Now, my background is in information systems. We needed a new website. And I knew a couple things, or pretty quickly figured out a couple things. I knew that if I like played around with it, I probably could have figured something out. You know, there's a lot of kind of do-it-yourself platforms out there, and I've got enough of a geek in me that that was kind of an appealing challenge. But I pretty quickly realized that if I did that, I was gonna spend all my time like messing with the website. And that really was not the focus of my ministry, right? The other thing I pretty quickly realized that if I did it, it was gonna be like the Pinterest fail of websites. Do you guys know what a Pinterest fail is? Okay, you know, when you see the beautiful cake on Pinterest and you tried and you're like, wow, fail, that doesn't look like the real thing. So I knew enough about what I wanted to know that if I couldn't make it work, it was gonna drive me bananas. So I started interviewing website providers. You know, I'm like, we're a church. You know, we weren't gonna go spend 20 grand on a website. Like, that wasn't happening. So I started talking to people, and they knew websites, and they didn't know church. And I was like, well, what about this and what about that? And they're like, well, whatever you want. I'm like, you're the professional. So I was getting nowhere with that. So, you know, it was kind of on hold because, like, you got a church to run, right? So my very, very non-technical rector, God love him, goes to Invite Welcome Connect in Texas. And he calls me. I'm going fast again. I'm getting this slow. He calls me up and he says, I have the solution. And I was like, oh my gosh, Lou, you didn't sign a contract, did you? He's like, no. He said, I met this guy from California, Merrill Watley. He's, you know, this is going to be great. So I'm skeptical, because I'm a skeptical person. And I called another friend of mine who was part of the E-Formation community, and I'm like, I need you to go check this guy out. So he's like, all right, I'm skeptical too. Calls back, he says, no, this guy's the real deal. I'm like, all right, way to go, Lou. Like, you know, have him call me. So I get this call from Merrill Watley in Ventura, California, and the first thing he says to me is, tell me a story about your church. And I was like, oh, you and I are getting along really well. So to make a long story short, professionally speaking, I ran off with the web developer. And that's how I do what I do. Now, the reason I'm telling you that is to give you a little sense of where I'm coming from, but just how critical this whole concept of who is. And it was because he asked me that question and really got me thinking that, again, I'm doing this job. So one of the things that it is my great joy to do is work with churches and help them kind of figure out who they are. Now, I know Melissa Rowell's here. Melissa, where are you? There she is. And that's something that she certainly does as well as part of her work at the Episcopal Church Foundation. So we started working with Beth McGill at St. Michael's Arlington, and I have to say, they did such a phenomenal job of figuring out who they were as a community that I wanted to share a little bit of that with you, because like, she's one of your own, and you ought to be really proud of this. So when we start working with a church, one of the first pieces of advice that I give them is one that one of my college professors used to give me in information systems. Do not get prematurely physical. This is great advice for teen daters. And it's also great advice for designing a website. So what does that mean? That means that the first thing everybody wants to do and they really need to avoid is like, we want the menu to look like this and we want these colors and these fonts, you know. Stop. The first question we need to think about are, who are you? Who is your church? What do people in your community think of your church? If you ask people about St. Paul's Episcopal Lebanon, what do they know? They know the rummage sale, and they know the nursery school. So, okay. The other question I like to ask people is, what would surprise somebody about your church? Like, what's your best-kept secret, right? So Beth and her team did a really amazing job of going through this process of thinking about how they saw themselves. They thought about, well, what ministries have energy around them. I love the question, Tamara, and I can't think of her, Plummer, from the Episcopal Asset Map, did a workshop I was at once, and she said, what are you excited about at your church? That's a really different question than like, hey, what are the six things we ought to put under this? You know, let's list our menu ministries for under this menu. What are you excited about? And you also need to think about, well, what ministries maybe need to die? You know, which ones have served their purpose, and it's time to maybe help them end. They thought a lot about how they were perceived in their community. And that also meant thinking about who demographically they were targeting. Like, they had to know their community too. That was part of their who question. Who is in our neighborhood? And I know as the Episcopal Church, we like to say we welcome everybody. But like, realistically, what does that look like? Who are the everybodies in your neighborhood? I am in, like I said, an upper middle class suburban parish. Like, we don't have a whole lot of college students. Now, another church, you know, Calvary and Shadyside is next to Pitt, Duquesne, Carlo, you know, Robert Moore, like it's all, you know, right there. So they've got college students. So knowing your who, and it was really interesting because I lived in Northern Virginia for a number of years. So talking to Beth, like, you know, I know the population that they're dealing with and, you know, very professional Washington folks that are wound a little too tight. And I love the fact that one of the things they recognized, she said, you know, we kind of know who we are, and we know we're wound a little too tight, but we kind of laugh about it. Like, we kind of have a sense of humor about ourselves. So I thought that was really cool. And the other thing is to think about, who do we want to be going forward? I was talking to somebody today about the Annandale neighborhood, which is actually where I used to live, and they were talking about the different influxes of people from different countries that were now represented there that were very different from 20 years ago. So one of the exercises they did that I thought was really cool, and this is going to kind of lead into some of the work we're going to do tonight, they pulled up the websites of all the churches, Episcopal or otherwise, within like a radius of around them. And there's a lot. And they looked at their websites and their social media accounts. And this is one of the first things that I do when I'm working with a new church. And they weren't looking to say, like, oh, how do they have their menus set up or, you know, whatever. But they were like, all right, what's the personality? What's the vibe I get from this church? So what's the story they're sending out into the world? And I thought that was a really great exercise because they said, okay, how are we like them? How are we different from them? And I think it really helped clarify their thinking. So how do we assess personality of a church if we're looking at their social media or if we're looking at their website? Some of you may be cringing here. That's okay. You know, we've seen them. So your website, your social media presence, is really kind of your digital front door, right? Because it's really the first thing that people see. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette did a photo essay a while back called Silent Sanctuaries. So we already get to have a conversation about like the silent aspect of it, about churches who were no longer used as worshiping congregations. And I looked at these pictures and I was like, wow, you know the analogy I'm going to make here, right? Some of our websites kind of look like this. You know, they're kind of weedy and overgrown, and they've got a banner up from Easter 2013, right? You know, and the congregations inside might be thriving and faithful and vibrant, but you'd never get that from the way they present in the digital space. And by the way, I'm just going to throw this at you. If you only update your website twice a year, you can't complain about those parishioners that only show up at Christmas and Easter. Just saying. All right. Some of you may be congratulating yourself. You might be saying, this is not my website. 10 years ago, somebody gave us, you know, $10,000, and we rebuilt it, and it's amazing. It's the Duomo. It is big and complex, and it has everything, and it's beautiful, and it's deep and wide, and it's totally intimidating, and you couldn't afford to build it in today's dollars, and it's a historical landmark, so you can't change anything on it. So it's imposing, and no one has a sense of how to access it. So either way, these kind of engagements with your church on social media and on your website, this is how people are looking at your church. Even if I say to my neighbor, ah, St. Paul's great, you should go sometime. You know, I say to my friends, they trust me, but not that much. They're still going to look on your website. They're going to look on your social media. Here's the other thing. I know somebody is a transition officer here. When you are looking for new clergy to come into your parish, I'm thinking they're going to look on the website too. That really sends a message about who you are. So let's assume you have a reasonable website. You know, we'll jump to that conclusion. So let's start talking about some of the things that you might be putting out there, some of the content, and how that's going to work, how you project personality. Because here's the thing. People look at any picture on your website. They look at any video on your website, and they're going to project a story on it, right? So you have your one, I think, Bruce, we were talking about this earlier. Bruce brought up this idea of, like, there's the story you project, there's the story that you kind of actually are, there's the story that other people project on you. So if you're not convinced that people project a story, I would suggest to you that that's actually why dog shaming is so funny. Do you know what dog shaming is? Okay. So our pets, when they do those things that pets do, people take a picture with, you know, the dog with a sign in front of them, like, this one, I sat on my brother and broke him. He sat on the cat. So people project human emotions on the dogs. That's what makes them so funny. So bear with me. I'm going to show you a totally obnoxious video And because I think it's an awesome example of projecting a personality and a story. Have any of you seen Walter? The little, he's a good one. Okay, so I'm jumping out here a second because I may be technical, but I've never figured out how to play videos from within PowerPoint, and it drives me nuts. So we're going to do that from here. I'm going to play you Walter. And I want you to think about it in the context of what we're projecting, and it is obnoxious.
We're in a car. Okay. Stop interrupting me. Walter. I told you why we can't go to the park. I told you why we can't go to the park. It's closed today because they're spraying for bugs. Do you want to live with creepy crawlers all over? I guarantee you don't. You really need to think about how you talk to me. You're disrespectful without even knowing my reasons why. You talk over me. You are allowed to have a voice here in 2018, you know? But it's like you're crossing the line on being disrespectful each and every time.
So again, I mean, so many stories she could have told on that one, and that one, like, I just love. So, okay, so I think that kind of proves we do project story. Oh, and the other aside that I'm just going to throw out there, and I know we're not talking about words and we're not talking about language so much, but I am so fascinated. You know, we talk a lot about lingo in the Episcopal Church and our terminology. You know, I'm going to meet the sexton in the nave, and people are like, what? So the question becomes is, do we kind of keep our lingo and our terminology and invite people into it and educate them, you know, or do we try to make it more understandable? And I think it's fascinating. There's this whole, like, dog language that's evolved on social media, and that was what a lot of the goofy spellings and that kind of stuff were. There's, like, an article on NPR about it. This just fascinates me. Anyway, I have weird interest. So here's the game we're going to play. We're going to look at a bunch of pictures, and I want you to tell me a story about this church. So what do you see? And I mean, like, anybody, come on. It's a what? A send-off. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. It's a healing. The commissioning. Community. Prayerful. Intimate. Not alone. Connected. Touching. So what do you think, like, what do you think the like is a community? I mean, these are all some good words. Anything else we might glean? Like, what else do you look at this picture and think, oh, that's interesting? And that's, sure. So, I mean, and that's a consideration. But on the other hand, I'd rather know that. A very dear friend of mine is on the autism spectrum. And, like, this is her worst nightmare. So, again, and that's fine. If this is authentically your church, again, as a visitor, I'd rather know that. If I can't, you know, or I'm going to at least make a point of, like, staying to the perimeters. I think it's interesting. There are no pews. Do we see that? And I think it's also clear, like, we have no idea who the clergy person is. You know, if they're in this picture, I don't even know. What? Dude, I'm impressed. I don't know how you pulled this out, but, like, all right. So again, this, you know, the things that different people are going to see. Right. Okay. All right. So let's keep playing this game. Okay. First thing I will tell you right now, this is not a church in Pittsburgh. Okay. That is the first thing I'm going to tell you right now. You know, that's interesting. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. Because I think they're a university parish. So I don't know, you know, or if it's just like the whole kind of California vibe thing, or if it is. But that's, so okay, but that also brings up, what is that message? Do people look at our images and say, oh, everybody's dressed up in fancy, I need to have money to go to this church? And there are certainly churches like that. High energy. Meet God outdoors. Young people. Yeah. I think it's also interesting where they're talking, you know, surfing in spirituality. Are they going for like the spiritual but not religious? You know, is that part of their, I don't, you know. Let's. Well, you know, maybe, but okay. You know, these are the kind of things. I don't know. All right. We'll keep playing here. All right. Okay, so I have to tell you a little bit of a story. Thank you. Okay. We love this church so much, okay? I will tell you, Mother Peg was retiring, and this is like a little itty-bitty church in the middle of Illinois, like very farmland country, and, you know, she'd had no experience with any sort of social media or whatever, and we've got her on Instagram, and like, she's just great. And they're this like thriving little teeny tiny church in the middle of nowhere. And you know that their congregation skews older, whatever, but when you see this, they have a sense of humor, if they've got nothing else. And I love that. And humor is hard, because humor is so contextual. You know, when you see those goofy posts about like funny bulletin and funny church sign errors, like that's insider baseball. That might be funny to me as a former parish communicator, but humor doesn't always translate. So we have to think about, how does this translate to other people who might be looking at our websites or our social media? There are a lot of memes on social media also that rely on very racist stereotypes for their humor. And we need to think about, are we perpetuating stereotypes that we don't want to be perpetuating? So we really need to think about that stuff. I mean, humor, it is hard to do well, but every once in a while, like, you know, somebody, they're laughing at themselves. And usually if you're laughing at yourself, you can kind of get away with it. All right, what do we think about this church? Some what? Oh, I know, every youth person's like, ah, you know, like their vestry member's like, our insurance premiums just went up. They're fun-loving. Kids doing real ministry. Hey, you know, being involved. All right. Again, like, I love when people find things that I'm like, okay, I don't know where, is it, okay. They've got palm trees. Yeah, I mean, so you get a sense. Now, I don't know, does he come to church dressed like that? Maybe, I have no idea, but, you know, fun to think about. What? Okay. So, if we're recording this, but this is actually really funny. I would tell you, like, this is my former rector and associate rector who, oh, but wait, there's more. When he retired and she left St. Paul's, they ended up getting married. Which we never knew. Okay, I mean, so when you say that makes it even funnier. And like, they're very happy and mazel tov and whatever. But yeah, we were like, oh, wow. Like, I literally got an email from my bishop saying that they were getting married, and I had to read it 6 times going, what? Anyhow, so what does this tell you? What's that? welcome, community reunited, no home for hate. No, he never did. No. Yet, okay. Oh, people, we are going downhill fast. Go ahead. They are out in the community wearing goofy hats, and they're cold, and you know, but they're in their collars out in the community. You know, and so, I mean, obviously there's a concern about social justice and that kind of thing. Oh, we're going to move past. Julie had an interesting, well, go ahead and kind of talk to me about this, but I want to particularly address this picture. Kind of creepy? Interesting. Yeah. And that's so interesting because, so the question, Julie, what exactly was it? Go ahead. Sure. And I thought about this, because that's funny. I never got a creepy vibe from, I mean, it's the side hug. It's the safe side hug. And they both seem to be participating in it. So, you know, but that's a really interesting point. And it's the same way I was having another sidebar conversation with somebody today about how do you show some, you know, the sacred moments of worship without being like really intrusive. And my church got very used to me kind of like standing behind the pillars being like, and there's things that I would take pictures of and there are things that I wouldn't. You know, if you're kneeling in the pew with tears running down your face, I am not taking your picture. But, you know, there are moments at Eucharist, and again, it depends, because that to me, that's a very sacred moment and a very, you know, ultimately, obviously the sacred moment. But, you know, when we sometimes would have children at Eucharist, and particularly for our Eucharistic celebration, where there was a lot of photo taking. Again, I'm from Western Pennsylvania. A lot of parishioners grew up with First Holy Communion, which obviously in the Episcopal Church, we encourage children to take communion from the get-go. But we do have a Eucharistic celebration to help former Roman Catholics like feel like, okay, no, it really is okay for your kids to take communion and please have them do this. And sometimes grandma buys little white dresses, which is fine. It's pastoral. So we take pictures. And I'm okay with it then because it's kind of a celebration and when all the kids are gathered around the altar and that kind of thing. But like Julie said, I think showing some of the pastoral care ministries can be harder. And is it, you know, hands holding like a covered dish? I don't know. But they are the more challenging photos. Yes. Interesting. They are engaged with one another. I'm not saying they're engaged. I don't know these people. Lord, we are moving on. Okay. Well, and that's what's interesting too, because things change. What might have been a very innocuous, innocent picture, now in our current societal context, we look at and we're like, ooh, I don't know about that. So, and whether it's the way, you know, an adult putting their hand on a child's shoulder or something like that, you know, all of these pictures, there's different lenses. And so it is important to think about how might someone misconstrue this, because again, they are projecting their stories. I love this picture. They like dogs, always a bonus. One of the things that I would tell you, and I mentioned this morning, your building is not a story. Please, for the love of all that is holy, do not show me a picture of empty pews. Please don't do it. And I will tell you, St. John's Jackson, their building is one of the most majestic spots, like in all of creation. It faces the Grand Tetons, and you sit in the pews, and there's a plate glass window because no stained glass like can compete with that vista. And it's really funny because, you know, this is another one of their pages, but I mean, really, like, I think it provides such a great context. Here you have this, or contrast. Here you have this incredibly scenic place, and this, you know, and I'm showing up with the people under the antlers with the dogs. So we've been looking at still video, or still imagery. I'm at the end of the day and I'm a little babbly. I also wanted to show you some different videos that I like, that I think do a really good job. Now, I'm gonna pick on you rectors for a minute. I see a lot of church welcome videos, which is you sitting at your desk in front of your bookcase with your seminary diploma behind you. Does anyone recognize this? Talking about how wonderful your church is, you know, and that's great, but let me show you the church that I'd probably wanna go to. And I'm jumping out of here again, sorry. Doopy-doopy-doo.
If what I am is what's in me, then I'll stay strong, that's who I'll be. And I will always be the best me that I can be. There's only one me, I admit. Have a dream, I'll follow it. It's up to me to try. I'ma keep my head up high, keep on reaching high. Never gonna quit, I'll keep getting stronger. And nothing's gonna bring me down. Never gonna stop, gotta go. Because I know I'll keep getting stronger. And what I am is
thoughtful.
And what I am is
musical.
And what I am is
smart.
And what I am is
patient.
And what I am is
helpful.
There's nothing I can't achieve because in myself I believe in those. Gonna keep all heads up high, keep on reaching high. Never gonna quit, just keep getting stronger. And nothing's gonna bring us down. Never giving up, gotta go. Because I know I'll keep getting stronger. What I am is nothing I can't achieve because of myself. I believe in you. Gonna hold my head up high, keep on reaching high. I'm never gonna stop, I'll keep getting stronger. Nothing's gonna bring me down. Never give it up, gotta go. Yeah, I'll keep getting stronger.
I love that video. Like, I watch these and I get choked up. Like, it just, you know. So why does that video work? Tell me what you liked about it. Okay. What did other people see in it? Yeah. Love. Love. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Ooh, yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Oh, I mean, she did a phenomenal, and like, she pulled this together in like iMovie, okay? I mean, this is not a videographer, okay? She's actually a family systems therapist, and we'll come to that in a minute. Any other conversation, yeah. Yeah, and let's pick up on that for a minute. This is really key. There's some ridiculous percentage of videos that are watched on the internet with the sound off. Without the music, you would lose, you know, you would lose a certain amount of the energy, but she does a really good job of creative captioning, not only with the little kind of tickers at the bottom, but in some of the things that she shows, you would still get the message of love through this video, even if you watched it with the sound off. Yeah. She played with the timing of it. Yeah. And there's no video in that video. It's all stills. So, I mean, it really shows you what you can do with just still pictures. Anything else that people... Yeah. Anything else that people liked in that? Absolutely, yes, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, pets and kids, you know, that's people do, you know, they do like that. So just to give you a little of background on that, so Colette Potts is, like I said, a family systems therapist or counselor or something along those lines. And she kind of stumbled into taking on their children's ministry, as so many of our children's ministry people do. And she said, okay, what is the one thing that, you know, people in this community, that they can't get anywhere else but at church? What do they not get at soccer and band and, you know, oboe lessons and, you know, whatever the many things the kids do? And love. I mean, and love in action. You know, the whole focus being love in action. And so she put together this video. She built a children's ministry around it and put together this video to, like, show her vestry what their children's program was all about. That's why she put this together. Well, they liked it so much, they put it on the website. And the number of families who are in their church were so psyched about it, because, again, it's got the great energy and it captures what they love about their church. And they shared it. And it's got, like, you know, a gabillion likes. That's an estimate. But people responded to it and have started going to their church because of it. That's a welcome video. Because, you know, I said earlier today in the Going Deeper section, anytime you're putting a video out there, to me, there's got to be some sort of call to action. What do you want people to do when they watch this video? And, you know, a lot of times the answer is, want them to come to church. And never. She incidentally wrote a book called Love First that is just out recently this fall, and about her ministry. So I've not had a chance to check it out. So another thinking about, so again, this is back to our surfing church. This also gets into the who you are. We've talked about who are you at this particular place, at this particular time in your community. And so I wanted to touch on that a little bit and the role that I think we can play there. A story that I tell a lot is, let me back up on that. We need to be there for people when they need us. When something happens that has a major impact on the community, on the nation, when people are looking and saying, what is going on? What am I going to do? When there is fear and uncertainty and confusion, I mean, that's where we need to step in, right? That's what we do. Story I will tell you. So it was a very early Sunday morning, and I was driving to North Carolina, and I pulled up my phone and I looked at the news headlines, and this was the morning immediately following the Orlando Pulse nightclub shootings. And I see this and I was like, we need to respond to this. And every church is going to choose different things to respond to. But for whatever amount, you know, that struck me as like, all right, we need to offer something. So I texted my rector and I'm like, I am at the rest stop and I'm going to stop at the next one in 20 miles. Like, you better have something for me. Give me a prayer. Give me a whatever, you know, whatever you got. I will find an image. Let's go with this. You know, we need to be there for people. And people responded to that content. Now, this is not about Facebook likes, but it's acknowledging that when these things happen and people are trying to figure out, like, what's going on? You know, in the uncertainty and you know, what's happening? They get on social media. They go to the digital space to figure out what's going on. We need to be there too. We can't wait until Thursday's staff meeting to draft a statement and then give it to the web person to update. You know, like, we've missed that moment. And yeah, we are in a very rapid news cycle. You can't respond to everything that comes down the pike. I get that. But I think it is important to know your community and say, what are the issues that we need to respond to? So, I mean, unfortunately, you know, we've had how many, I mean, just really cataclysmic disasters, you know, in the past year. And this one was in particular, well, let's see, they've got flood and Thomas Fire. So that was the flood that was in Houston, and then the Thomas Fire, which was in California. And I know a number of our churches are responding to the hurricanes that have taken place. So I think it's really important. Now, right now, all this church was able to say is, we're praying and supporting all those affected. You know, we're here to help. For more information, like, they're trying to figure out too. And that's the other thing. If we wait until we've got it all figured out, sometimes that's not helpful. So to even begin the conversation, to open that door to say, as this is going on, we'll let you know. There were churches that were impacted by these disasters that started out as being a place of refuge. So, you know, their kind of front page banner was, you know, come here for a hot meal or whatever. But then that evolved that then they had to evacuate. And so being able to communicate very quickly and responsively was really, really important. Now, we talked about telling stories at some different levels. And I'm really excited about this next video, which once again, I'm jumping out of my... because I think it does a great job of taking a church tradition and practice, Ash Wednesday, right? So if I'm going to make a video about Ash Wednesday, you know, how do you make that relatable to something that's currently happening? Well, this is from a church in Ventura, California, which is where my business partner lives. And I'll tell you, he was evacuated from his house for 10 days or a week or something like that. And so St. Paul's Ventura, when Ash Wednesday came around and people were still recovering from these fires, rebuilding their homes, they tied in the message of resurrection and rebirth of their community to Ash Wednesday. And I just think it's a really powerful video. I know what you're saying. I don't know what the name of that, but I think that the bigger question is finding music that you legally have the rights to use. And in the same way, in the same way that there are stock photo sites, there are all of that footage in there is actually like stock footage, which is amazing. But you know, it looks close enough to what's happening that you know it was relatable to people. And there are music libraries off the top of my head. I can't. Right. Sure. And I mean, you can look up, you know, free stock or what, like, you know, free music or free stock music or, you know, there's different sites that have that. There's something like freemusic.com. There you go. Right. Right. And you can search by like instrumental, piano, uplifting, you know, like anything. Now, speaking very briefly about stock photos, there is a time and place. I'm not a big fan of stock photos, but sometimes like that's what you've got to do. The one thing that I want to point out to you that really frustrates me with stock photos is there tends to be very little diversity in them. And I really have a problem with that because again, images and optics matter. So if I'm talking about, you know, we're having a teen event and I look up group of teenagers, inevitably they're like a group of white kids. So I think a lot about how we're presenting and making sure that that's important to me. And even if you're not using stock photos, if you're using photos of your church, and that's exactly what I was going to say. That was my next point. When you are using photos of your church, I mean, you are who you are. And so reflecting that accurately and intentionally is important. If everybody's over 60, don't ask that one 20-year-old to like stand front and center in every picture. You know what I mean? Or whatever, you know, the person is that maybe isn't your, you know, typical demographic of your church. So it's a tough balance, but you also, you know, if you show a picture of the choir, but you only focus on the men's choir, someone could assume, oh, it's a men's choir. So it's always a balance. The idea is thinking about it and being intentional. Okay, so we are Yeah, we are so slow. Whoops. Okay, we're going to move along. That's St. Michael's again, but I want to jump into the next question. And I'm going to pick on you rectors again, but I love you. My question to you is, who owns your story? Is it you? Is it the communications coordinator? Is it the parish administrator? You know, it actually, when I asked this question once, you know, just like in Sunday school, where like Jesus is always the right answer, somebody was like, Jesus. I'm like, okay. But you know, Jesus isn't updating your Instagram, so let's talk about that. And let's go back to that Apple commercial of what will your verse be? And I would argue that as the people of God, we all own the story of our church and our communities. So that means that sometimes we need to let go of control of that story and invite other people to participate in the telling of it. And Lord knows we love broadcast media. We love to push stories out. But how do we invite people into it? If we want people to be engaged and own their faith and be engaged in their congregations and engaged in growing in their faith, we have to trust them to make and share their stories. Do we respect the dignity of every human being enough to amplify their voices? It's a tough call. When it works, though, it can be really powerful. So this is my daughter and her friend Emily and a goat. Every year, my church goes on mission trip. And, you know, we always had the, like, no phones on mission trips. And, you know, we were like, okay, everybody write in your prayer journals. Well, kids don't write in prayer journals. So they'd be, like, cramming on the way home. This was not a good spiritual activity. And when they were supposed to stand up in front of the congregation and quote from their prayer journals, like, it can be summed up as, like, you had to be there. Didn't work. So then I took a ton of pictures because I can learn. But if I was over here, something good was happening over here. And I missed it. So then we were like, all right, wait a minute. They all have their phones. So we talked to them about responsible storytelling. Where, you know, how do we tell stories of the people we are working alongside of on mission trips? We are not doing poverty porn here. No, you are not using taking pictures to get out of doing works at work. And then we kind of turned them loose to document what they were doing. And that was great. We got like a bonanza of photos. And I was able to use those. And then what was really cool is when we implemented the new website, Instagram automatically updates the website and you can direct the content where it goes. So we put Instagram on an iPad, church Instagram account, and handed it to the kids and said, tell your story. And this is updating the website. Now I gave them more parameters than that. And to this day, there are kids who are like, I know, use the hashtag. And I'm like, thanks, you learned well. And so, you know, what does that mean? Did we have a lot of selfies with the goat that year? Yeah, we did. But I think the power of saying to a young person, you own your story. You are part of the, you know, you are a member of the ongoing story of the people of God. Tell your story. And in the vernacular, you're used to telling your story. This is where they tell their stories anyhow. And so I think that's really powerful. Now, am I advocating that, like, we unleash communications chaos? No. There are ways that we can invite people into the story and yet still have some control over it. Editorial calendars, you know, you decide who actually has access to your social media accounts. And if someone posts something dumb, can we take it down? Can we address it? Yes, we can. The final thing that I want to get to, yeah, I promise it'll be final. One of the things that I really like when we talk about evangelism being, you know, how God is transforming my life, at the Evangelism Matters Conference, the first one, we did the cardboard testimonials. Have you guys seen any of these? So these are really cool. So again, this is something that Beth was able to do with her congregation. And again, what I like about these is you don't need sound for this to be meaningful. So I wanted to show you that. Doopy-doopy-doo. Where am I? There they are. Here's your inspirational music again. So what do we like about that? Yes. Okay, transformation, again, in a story, something happens. And that something happens can be transformation. Yes. And I've heard that a lot with cardboard testimonials, where it's like, oh, these people are real. You know, because I've definitely seen churches do this as well. Yeah. Other thoughts? Right. Right. Exactly. And dressed how they were dressed and who they were. Yeah. Anything else? Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Right. Yes. 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 Right. Right. You know, like things crossed out and yeah. Yeah. There was an authenticity to that, I think. Anything else on that? Well, exactly. Exactly. And if that's kind of your welcome video, then, oh, that's really interesting. Yes. Yes, that's interesting. Yeah. 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 Anything else on that one? So, you know, that was something that, again, when Beth was working with her website and figuring out, like, what they wanted to do, they loved that concept. And they said, okay, so we're going to try to do that at St. Michael's. And one of the things that I love is that, like, it kind of did go as smoothly as they wanted it to. And they were trying to get at not how is God transforming my life, but kind of, you know, St. Michael's and transformations that occurred through St. Michael's. And this is super brief, but I just want to show you the outtake because it's kind of funny. And but in a good way, I think.
Oh, your hand's covering the knee.
Perfect. Okay, let's do it one more time.
Do you want it taller,
Beth? Did you say it's a video?
Yeah.
Do you want it a little bit taller?
It's a video. This is my worst from being
what if you had a really tall
How do you feel about that?
Good, but now it's crooked.
Oh, yep.
So, that's kind of my point. You don't need to get so hung up on the outcome, the product, that you don't recognize the value in the process. Because that was one of the things that Beth shared with us, was that even though they, I mean, a lot of the content they produce, she's like, I don't think it's usable. And we had to do all kinds of shenanigans to like kind of extract some of the, you know, because they do use some of that imagery on their website and not as a video, but as a still. But she said the process of doing this, they learned a lot about themselves. And they thought about, well, they started to think about these questions. And I had the same experience. A colleague decided that they were going to do this for their VBS. They were like making kind of little vignettes, and they got a green screen, and they told kids not to wear green, but they did, and this one was like a floating head. And I mean, you hear them in the background going, keep going, keep going. You know, and it's comical. Like, this is not winning any Oscars. But the kids were into it, and they had fun with it. And I think that's an important aspect of it. Sometimes these things are not about product, about producing great content, but sometimes there's ways that even the process becomes something that can be positive for us. And again, this reminds people, whether we use it or not, that they have a story, they own their story, and maybe begins to give them a language and a practice of telling that story. So the final question that we're going to table till tomorrow is, who are we trying to reach? And what does the world look like that they live in? How do they engage with the world? So, I mean, really, tomorrow, we're going to be sailing into some uncharted waters, is what I would like to say on that one. The other thing that I'll do right now really briefly, and some of this we may get to tomorrow, but if there's anything in particular that you're like, wow, I haven't heard her talk about at all, I would really encourage you to catch me after Compline and mention it, because, you know, as I've been here this week, I've been adjusting based on a lot of the conversations and feedback and questions and comments that you've had, and I'd like to be able to continue to do so, so that tomorrow we can really wrap up this conversation and give you everything you need to think about. So with that, am I on time? 8:01. I think I'm exactly like on time. All right. So.